Thanks for coming. My name is Steve Wheat. I'm Chief IT Architect of Emory University in Healthcare in Atlanta. I'm here today with Dave Moldoff. He's walking down the aisle from Academy One, and he's also on the board of directors of PESC, the organization leading up at Unify. And I've got Todd Jackson here, from also from Emory University, the technical lead in our architecture group. So PESC at Unify. Let me drive from this one. We're going to swap out and switch, so this will probably be easier. What we'd like to do today is go over just a few points about PESC at Unify and make sure we have some time at the end to have a little bit of discussion, because we're really, since we were just launching PESC at Unify today, you're among the first to see the production service, we're really interested in getting everyone's feedback. So what is PESC at Unify? It's a web service registry with a suite of semantic tools for education. It's intended to be community-driven, so we want people to participate, register web services, annotate them, say which services are good, which are bad, and you can even use stronger language than that, although we do filter it somewhat. That's our intention. It provides a framework for SOA governance, and we'll talk a little bit about the functions of SOA governance, because you hear a lot about that, but when you actually start doing it, you find out that you can make a lot of progress with just doing a few simple things: registering services, monitoring them, storing some basic metadata, and it takes a lot of organizations some time to get over that hump. So at Unify is intended to help people do that. This is a public registry, but the intention is for Ed Unify to also offer virtual private registries in the future to help organizations manage their private services, or manage a private registry of their services. Clearly, you can register private services in this public registry, and there's a lot of value to that. We'll talk about it a bit. The third thing is, what when we talk about what it is, BioCatalog is a web service registry for the life sciences, and EdUnify is actually based on the BioCatalog software. And BioCatalog is such a cool thing. I want to actually take a brief digression and show it to you right quick, for those who aren't aware. BioCatalog was developed by folks at the University of Manchester in England and the European Bioinformatics Institute. I encountered this in my work on the Atlanta Clinical and Translational Science Institute. Emory University is also the largest healthcare system in Georgia, so we do a lot of clinical and translational science research. I became familiar with this working on that project, and then when I got involved in EdUnify, we started looking for candidate systems to help us jump ahead, you know, to not rebuild something from scratch that was already there, that was adding value. And the BioCatalog is pretty impressive. It's already got over 1,700 web services registered from 128 providers, and they're getting closer and closer to that 500 member mark. And remember, you don't have to sign in and get an account to view this data. Same with EdUnify. So there's a lot of people using this and searching for services who don't even sign up for an account. You just sign up for an account when you want to register services or annotate them. So let me give you one really quick use case of BioCatalog, because a lot of the use cases that Dave's going to be talking about later are very similar, just in a different space, the education space. I'm going to search for web services that implement BLAST. Does anyone know what BLAST is? Surely someone knows. Isn't BLAST sound really dramatic and cool? Anyone? Okay. It's a basic local alignment search tool. Basically, what it's used for is matching sequences, protein and nucleotide sequences. So when a researcher is looking at a new protein or a new sequence, they're trying to figure out, what is this? How does this protein behave? What is this nucleotide sequence? They need to find something similar. And so they need to go search databases of all these genomes, genomic, proteomic data, and try to find something similar. Now, that doesn't that doesn't tell them what it does. That just gives them a starting point to experimentally begin to approach this new thing. But here's one very common use case of the biocatalog. Look at all these services that came up. I've got 10 different services that just implement BLAST. So someone might immediately say, why do we need 10 BLAST services? And, you know, I'm thinking ahead because this is what education people are going to think. Why do we need to know about all these services? Why do we need them? Well, with local alignment searches, even though the algorithm, the service performs may be the same or very, very similar across those services, what's different is the data. It's very expensive and hard to acquire, you know, through experimentation and curation, all of that genomic and proteomic data, and we can't replicate that at every site. And it's really built by various research groups. So when I'm a researcher, say at Emory, and I want to go search for and, you know, figure out what this protein or nucleotide sequence is, I'm going to go out there to BioCatalog and say, I want to go find all the BLAST services that are available on the web. I might run it through all of them, you know, if that's feasible. I might say, hey, I'm interested in these four or five, and I'm going to get an answer back, a better answer than if I didn't have this registry to go tell me what BLAST services were out there with all this good annotation about what they do and what their coverage is, what genomic and proteomic data is behind each one of these services. So that's enough on the biocatalog, but I just wanted to give you that use case so you kind of know what infrastructure at Unify is built upon. Okay. At Unify, we started in December of 2009, so not too long ago, with a relatively large group. I think we had over 30 or 40 people at the very first meeting, and we were easily able to split that group into smaller working groups. And we basically sat down and said, how do we tackle this problem for education? We know we have these integrations to build. We know there are new services that can make use of all this institutional data. We know there's this vast investment out there of all these systems, great IT infrastructure that our organizations have. How do we leverage that similar to how it's been done in cancer research with the CA grid, in life sciences with the biocatalog? How can we do that here? So currently we have 62 participants from 36 organizations, and officially 25 of those organizations are supporters of PESCED Unify. There's our pretty graphic and logo. At a high level, EdUnify is a web service registry and search index. It allows you to register web services, not only operating web services, but you can also register specifications and implementations that may not be deployed somewhere. Those are, in many cases, just as valuable as a functioning web service for us, for all of us organizations that implement vended systems. In many cases, it'd be great to know what our vendor offers in the system, in the systems that we've bought, what web services their system supports, because we can use that knowledge in building new integrations. So if we can get abstract services, services that are implemented but not deployed, and deployed services all registered there, it's going to be a great tool. So we can search and discover web services. Annotating them for interoperability is huge, and this is probably one of the biggest areas of potential growth, both for things like the biocatalog and at Unify, CA Grid index service. The more people use them and the more people provide annotations to how the operations and data of these services map to standard vocabularies and ontologies, the more we're able to develop integration tools that will help us crosswalk these services and query multiple services as if they were one. So one of our goals is to really build that functionality out. As more and more people use these registries, we can build more tools to leverage those annotations. And the other really big and practical aspect of SOA governance is monitoring and tracking web services. Even within one organization, like at Emory and Emory Healthcare, or if you look at the ACTSI, the Atlanta Clinical and Translational Science Institute, where we have just several organizations participating, doing SOA can be really problematic when people are like, hey, is the service up? How long has it been up? Should this be working? And people are emailing back and forth and texting, what's going on, you know. But if they can just go to one place, the same place where you registered it, and that's monitoring it, and it's telling you it's up, it's telling you what operations are currently supported, that really accelerates the collaboration of implementation, just like the registry information accelerates the collaboration in design. And evaluating and commenting on web services, we mentioned the annotation aspect. Collaborating with the providers and users of services, this is something on the research side, like with BioCatalog, that certainly happens. But I think just because system vendors in the education space are trying to provide service to users and academic institutions want to provide input and feedback on these products, I think this area has great potential for EdUnify, maybe even more so than BioCatalog, because it can provide a platform for saying, hey, thanks for providing a service. This works great. We want it to do X, Y, and Z, though. Or, hey, we really don't use this functionality, so maybe you can just focus on this other stuff and not these 10 operations that we don't really use. All that provides a way to provide that focused feedback in a very accurate and relevant context. A lot of times when that feedback happens at a management or an executive level, something gets lost in translation. But if the technical folks at the vendors and the institutions working with these services can actually see on each operation and data object what their users are saying about it, I think that'll help drive the software development and enhancement cycle. And we've really already talked about what the problems are that this is intended to address, but clearly it's difficult to locate and access a lot of web services, and a lot of the data interchange services that we do have, the standards are not widely implemented. There's a lot of great standards out there, but a lot of times it leaves something to be desired when someone's like, who's actually implemented this? Who's using an IMS specification or a PES specification? How does that actually get manifest? Is that a web service or is that some sort of EAI thing? This can help answer a lot of those questions. Collaboration and reuse are really the exception instead of the rule. I think if we start working into our processes, and later after our demos, I'll talk a little bit about our process at Emory. If we can work into the fact that every time we develop something, we register it somewhere, whether it's appropriate for a public registry or a private registry, and kind of link those registries together, it really increases the chances that we're going to reuse these services and other vendors and collaborators will reuse them instead of re-implementing a whole stack of technology for an integration. Okay. So... I think we've already talked about that. Sometimes it helps to see a demo right away. So let's drill down on the detail. Todd's going to lead us through demos both of the EdUnify web application and the EdUnify mobile application. I can see the
screen. Hello. Okay. I am going to try to walk through this demonstration, although I'm not going to be able to hear what the demonstration is saying. You can actually go out and download these and view them at your leisure. So what we're talking about here is the EdUnify application itself, the web application we're talking about first. As Steve said, it's based on the BioCatalog application, but it's just deployed in a different context. BioCatalog focuses on research and life sciences. EdUnify is focusing on higher education, student data, administrative systems, and how to work them through, how to connect them all. So if you want to take full advantage of the EdUnify, the best thing to do is to sign up. By signing up, you can submit your own services, you can annotate and describe other services, and you can do some other things was there that I didn't get through.
There you go.
You can rate services, you can favorite services. So really it's a social engine for really discussing these things and making them the most valuable that they can be and findable by other people who might want to use them. So if you go out to the site, you follow the sign up link, you will provide some information, you'll provide an email address which will be used as your login ID. This is a private email address, nobody can see it. You'll provide a password, credentials. Then you'll provide some information about yourself, some public information that you don't mind people seeing. So your name and a public email address if you don't mind being contacted by other people of the community. And you can provide some affiliation information. Basically, all of this is just stuff that allows us to collaborate together as a community. Once you've done that, you submit the information, and it will send you an email. And just like many social networking sites, you'll follow that email, you'll activate your account, and once you've done that, you can take full advantage of the features of the registry. Now we'll go ahead and sign in. And once we've signed in, now we can actually start supplying stuff to the registry. prior to signing in, prior to registration, you can read everything that's out there. You just can't really provide anything. So once you've registered and signed in, now we can go ahead and register a service. We can register several types of services. Soap and rest are the two most popular. And actually, we can have a discussion about those as well that I think EdUnify starts to actually provide some discussion points. With registering a soap web service, we just provide the URL to the WSDL. We click on the preview button, and EdUnify goes out and discovers what it can about that web service through the WSDL. Okay, so it's basically just like reading a barcode. It's reading the WSDL, and it's telling us all the operations that are associated to this service, and we can provide more information during registration. Ideally, we will provide as much information at this point as we can. Otherwise, we can provide that information later, as can other members of the community. So once we've provided all the information that we can at this point, we'll click on the submit button, and it will save the entry and all of its information. So you can see this is a fairly large service that we have here. And all of that was obtained because it's a soap service. It was able to get that through the WSDL. So now we have the service. This is the service, kind of the details about this particular service, and you can see where we can further annotate this service. So this is during registration, but we can also do this at any time. Once we've signed in, we can follow the link for this service, and we can add tags to the service. We can rate the service. We can see other services that might be similar based on metadata that's similar between the two. So it's kind of linking all these things together. We can provide information about any licenses that are associated to the service, cost, any usage conditions, contact information. So basically, we're just providing a lot of information about this service, how it's used, so that other people might be able to use it as well. If you're the person that submitted an annotation, for example, a description, you have the ability to edit or delete that. Otherwise, you can just add more to it. And anything that you add as yourself, you can edit or delete. But you can't edit or delete stuff that other people, you know, put out there. So now I think we're looking at some of the operations of this service. So we'll drill down on a particular operation. And again, at every level, the further we drill down, we can add more annotations to each level of this service. So now we're looking at a particular operation. We can provide tags and descriptions at all levels. So this is an input for this particular operation. Every one of these pieces of data that we supply becomes a searchable piece of data for the search engine that this thing sits on top of. It uses the Solr search engine, very robust, and it really pulls it all together in a context that's appropriate for web services, and in our case, higher education web services. Although I don't know if the one that we're looking at here is really higher education. This is the postal web service. So where are we going next? Now I think we're going to do, this is just showing some of the detailed information that exists. You can see the monitoring over there, the little green tick mark. That indicates that all monitors have passed. Monitoring, as Steve mentioned, is a very powerful feature of EdUnify or BioCatalog, I think, because it really gives us a sense of how reliable this thing is. And these monitors range from simple endpoint checks, basically pings, is the service up and responding, to complex SOAP UI test suites that you can actually build. Again, using a tool like SOAP UI, you can upload that test suite to the registry, and it'll run that test suite on a regular interval and tell you, you know, just how reliable this thing is. And in the case of SOAP UI test suites, they can actually be business test suites. So there's a difference between is this service awake and is it actually responding to a request versus is it actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that's what a test suite can really do for you. So that's pretty powerful. Next, I think we're going to do a little bit more annotating and searching. Again, this is really what these things are all about. It's get the services registered and then socialize them. You know, let the community describe, annotate, tag, correlate, you know, get it all together as a community, and then these things become very valuable. The BioCatalog folks are using tools called like Taverna. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Taverna. It's a business process management engine that basically can plug into a registry like EdUnify and build complex workflows from those web services that have been registered graphically. I mean, it's really, really cool. Think about it. And we're always talking about that in higher education, business process management, this, you know, it's all. Well, this is what enables that type of stuff, getting all of this information and all these services centralized in a place where people can really describe how they're used and what they're intended to do, and then people can confidently go out and actually use them. And EdUnify provides the framework for allowing that to happen. And as Steve said, the governance model for making that happen. Where are we going next? Okay, now we're going to do some more searching. So everything that we've added along the way, as we've annotated this service, everything becomes part of that search index. You know, so if we go out and we want to find all the academic history web services that Dave might talk about later, we're going to find it. And at every level that we provide that information, it all becomes searchable data. So I think, again, and as I don't know if Steve, I can't remember if you mentioned this or not, but one of the things that we found as we were trying to find web services to populate this thing with, web services are out there. Everybody's using them, right? But you can't find them. they're really challenging to find. And we found that by trying to find things to put into this registry. Now that they're in this registry, though, they're findable. And Google's crawling this thing. And people, you know, you don't have to know anything about EdUnify to find services that are registered in EdUnify. But it's one of those, it's kind of the chicken or the egg thing. They have to be registered someplace before they can be found. And right now, many of them aren't. So they're basically they're nowhere to be found. So now we're continuing to annotate, we're searching, and I believe we're done. So that was a whirlwind tour, and as I said, you don't have to, we would like to see some people register, sign up, and go out and play around with EdUnify. You know, the more the merrier. You know, the more we have that are actively collaborating on these things, the better. But you don't have to. You can just go out and look around, too. You can read, but you can't write. Now,
the next thing that we're going to talk about is the mobile
app. And before we start, let me just say just a couple things about this that hopefully I won't run into Dave's time. The mobile app is an iPhone app, okay, and it uses the EdUnify's REST API to interact with the registry using the iPhone. And some of the reasons that we did this was to first demonstrate the use of the REST API, because that's kind of cool. But second, we wanted to we're kind of wanting to demonstrate the evolution of the human interface needs. People want what they want when they want it now and no more, and that's kind of what this app is doing. Initially, it's just a, kind of a read-only version of some of the same information. Yeah. Okay, so there, the REST API that the iPhone app uses is actually registered in the registry. So one of the other reasons for doing something like a mobile app for this is that it's a demonstration of what EdUnify enables. Because as a developer, as a software architect, I can go out to this registry and I can see all of these different operations and services that exist in this registry, and I can say, I could use these three services to build this type of app, and it's going to be real beneficial to my students or my faculty or my administrators of my institution. So there's several reasons of doing it beyond just the coolness factor. We hope that at some point there's that actual, it's actually very useful. And I'll talk about some of where we're going next once we're done. So sorry about that little caveat there.
Cool.
Okay. So let's see if there's anything else that I wanted to say. Yeah. So the things that you can do with the mobile app, and it'll get here in just a second. I guess I should have. So with the mobile app, you can view the services that have been registered. You can search over all the services in the registry. You can view the metadata about the service. You can view the monitoring information, the monitoring status as it currently exists. You can view documentation that may exist for the service, and we'll kind of go over that a little bit here in a minute. And you can also actually view operations or endpoints and actually invoke those endpoints if there's been an interface provided that will allow you to do that. So the first thing that you're going to see if you're running the iPhone mobile app is you're going to see the service listing, which is basically the last 10 services that have either been registered or modified in the registry. Pulls them up in a little table view, and it shows you the name, the description, and the type of service there as kind of an overview. If you follow or if you tap on one of the services that are in the list, it will take you to a little bit lower detail. You can also search. I guess this is where you search from too. If you tap one of the links, it'll take you to a little more detailed information, some of the same information that you saw back in Ed Unify that includes the description, who submitted it, the provider of the service, the type of service, and then we have interactive links to things like if you want to actually view the WSDL associated to a service, if it's a SOAP service, any documentation URLs that exist for the service. A lot of these services, and this is kind of interesting, Ed Unify is where we would like to have all this information if possible, but that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. Many of these services are documented, though. It's just hard to find it. But so at least Ed Unify allows us to give a link off to that documentation so that we can see more where it's at currently until we can get it into Ed Unify. And finally, we can see the monitoring status. This one has passed. And this is all live data that's retrieved when the user taps that button. Okay, so it uses the REST API to go out and get that. I believe now we are following the documentation link for this particular service. So this is an example of, see, I told you I can't remember all. Oh, okay. So yeah, we're following the documentation link, and this is taking, for this particular service, again, this depends on how well this service is annotated in EdUnify and also what the provider is giving us with this service. Some providers don't provide documentation for their services, so you link off to nothing, or there's just nothing to link to. So, but in this case, there actually is a documentation site where we can see a little bit more about this service. This is showing the auto rotation. This is just...
Sorry, I don't know why I'm doing this. That's the rotation.
This is just the auto rotation, so I just thought we'd throw that in there. And then I believe now we will go back and we will follow the endpoint link. So in this case, this particular service, the provider of this service, actually provides an interface that describes all the endpoints. Again, this is stuff that really should be in EdUnify. It would be really cool if we could get it in EdUnify. But through this interface, we can actually go out and interact with some of these operations. And in this case, we can actually submit the service right from the iPhone app. So that's kind of cool. But it depends on who, you know, what the service is and if that's really appropriate. Now we're going to do a search. So it's using the REST API to search for any services that have the keyword Amazon associated to them somehow. That could be in a tag or in a description or in a... Yes?
EdUnify Mobile.
Yeah, it's just EdUnify.
And if you don't want to pay for it, that one's like $2. There's a free version for BioCatalog that we also did at Emory, and it's just called BioCatalog Mobile. So they really do the same thing, just talk to different registries.
BioCatalog
Mobile.
Yeah, there are two versions of this, and really the main difference between the two versions is which registry they point to. This one points to the EdUnify registry, and the other one points to the BioCatalog registry. So now we're looking at a different service that we found. This one, in this case, the service is monitoring status is a warning because one of the monitors that ran in the background could not access some of the endpoints. And I think now we're going to search for a little bit different. You know, this really is just showing some of the different behaviors of the application depending on the type of service that you find. And in this case, I believe this is a service where there are no documentation links, so the app just says, I can't go anywhere. Why is that important? It's important because we have curators. We have people that are actively looking at the services that are registered in EdUnify and looking for things like missing documentation URLs. And they're saying, hey, we need to get some documentation URLs associated to this service. So they're contacting the submitters or the providers of that service to help get it documented better, you know, so it can become valuable here as well. Okay, so that's as far as the demo. Now, just real briefly, do I have time? Am I good?
Yeah.
I get a little bit excited.
Just don't start pounding on
Yeah, I've been known to do that. Okay, so now the last thing that I want to talk about, now that the demos are over, and you can go out and view those demos by following any of the three links that we listed there. We actually do have a link that works on an iPhone, so that's kind of nice. It's a QuickTime version of a demo. Where next? Where next for the mobile application? I'm sure through that demo, if you could follow it along in my rush to speak, you saw several places where there could be some enhancements, obviously. There's always going to be places for enhancements. We're going to be doing a version for the Android platform very shortly, hopefully within the next few weeks. That's the other thing about this. That application was actually built within a matter of weeks. I mean pretty much. I mean, getting it through the Apple process was a little bit different, but, you know, and why is that so? Why is that the case? Because the services existed for us to use. So have other mobile platforms. Next thing that's coming with EdUnify is a writable REST API. So what this means is currently the EdUnify mobile and the BioCatalog mobile applications, they're really read-only. They're just presenting data to you from the registry using the REST API. The next version is going to have a writable REST API, which will allow us to actually annotate these services from our iPhones.
You can complain about services on the go.
Right. Complain about services on the go. And you know, so I think that's just very, very cool. And the other thing is just the fact that what I think may end up happening as this community curates all these services and we start to form linkages between them and start to build actual business processes using the services, student and faculty will actually be, I hope, interested in actually interacting with the registry from like a mobile application, because we're getting it out there now. Now it's just a matter of tying them all together. And Dave's going to talk about some of the business cases where we actually do tie these things together, and you'll see how that might, you know, that might come in the future as well. So I'm very excited about it. Hope you are too.
Thanks,
Don. Use this?
We start obviously with a demonstration first. I can't go too far. This doesn't let me go. So that's what happens when we don't have services. I'm going to talk a little bit about the use cases, and to back step a little bit, I'm sure from a show of hands, how many people have actually tried to do it kind of integrations with a vendor system or a system outside your enterprise? How many have actually done that? And generally speaking, have you had super success in finding? It was really easy. It was really easy. Are you saying that? No. And that's why you're sitting here, right? So in a general sense, we spend about 50% of our IT effort on integration. And as a result, we end up redoing things over and over and over again. So the idea of web services, obviously, the hope of it, is to hopefully focus a little bit on reuse. And some of these REST services, as well as the web services that are now currently being put on the system, obviously, you know, we could use them right now. As Todd was showing, the physical act of building an application for the mobile, and it was only an example application of what can be done when the services begin to be exposed. Go back to the PowerPoint real quick.
Okay.
From a standpoint of, you know, just leave it there. Real-time data services with SOAP or with REST, we're really going down a new territory. You know, when we think of transcripts, then how many people have actually experience going into a registrar's office and saying, what's the process for submitting transcripts from one school to the other? Have any of you experienced that? Right? Most of you would probably say it's a batch process. You print, you know, 2 weeks later, the transcript gets printed and it gets sent by snail mail, generally speaking. Only about 8% of the United States, and I'm not talking European here, 8% of the United States submit transcripts electronically. Right? So we really don't have 21st century tools today to deal with the implications of mobility and so forth as we think we should have, right? So enriching the development of composite applications, you know, enabling new learning styles with new applications that can be built with composite apps, engaging content-sensitive services so that I can actually interrogate the user, you know, with information and actually respond quickly with it are all things we could do if we had access to services and the data sets that are installed on campus or on-premise campuses or, for that matter, in the cloud. Right? That's the whole idea of developing composite applications. And really linking together the internal external with loosely coupled technologies. And if we do it with tightly coupled technologies, if the service is down, then the person's out of luck, right? So the idea here is that it could really offer alternatives. So for example, if I would go to the registry and find a service, I could have a backup service. you could programmatically do things now, you know, with the concept of RedShare that we just couldn't do before. So, and again, I'm going to go through some of the use cases of this in more detail in a second, but the reusable aspect of data transformation, most of you probably have to do some kind of government reporting, like, for example, iPads or international reporting or whatever, right? That government reporting could be polled as a service instead of us doing it through FTP and file transfer, which is a very tedious process. What governments are really doing today are beginning to move towards wanting to have more access to your data in more real-time, closest to real-time data access as possible. They want to do research with that data. Right? Doesn't mean you have to get it down to the level of the person, but it does mean that we have to have ways of answering that data in a uniform way. And then there's gateway applications. I mentioned transcripts, for example, online emissions applications. There's a whole range of applications that can be built as gateways. Right? And we've just begun content delivery applications, and the gateway could be charging a service fee, a transaction fee, back to the user or the person who gets the value of the service or the sponsor of that service, and then delivering content, and again, as I said, as a transaction. And the last really is the one I'm going to show in more detail with Steve is the Academic Web Service, which is just an example of a real-time service that's already been put into real-time use in South Carolina.
Okay. Take a look at that.
Yeah. So the Academic Web Service conceptually is a transcript. What Midlands Tech and other services that are being exposed, by example, University of South Carolina, is the same web service across 7 schools or 8 schools. Those schools expose the academic history with authentication from the student. You know, in other words, the student has to send its authentication to the system. It exposes it, pulls the academic course history to whatever application requests it, and assuming passing authentication. Right, a very simple service. It isn't requiring the footprint of a transcript. It doesn't require all the payload, but it's a very simple payload request. And here's an example of 7 schools that have actually published the same identical service. And you can start to see where this heads, that if imagine every school offered the same kinds of services, whether it's course services or it's meeting session calendaring services, all of a range of kinds of services that can then be engaged in, again, future applications or future composite applications we build.
Hey, Dave, can I interrupt for 1 second? Because I think there's an important point here that a lot of people, at least technically, probably will ask. Not all these web services that you see in this real-world use case are public. The WSDL is public. All these sites have published the WSDL, but the services require, in some cases, authentication. In some cases, that's a username and password of a student. In some cases, it's a username and password of a student and only allowed from certain IP addresses. I don't think in this particular use case anyone's using more, you know, complex authentication methods, but the point is, all of these are still registered. And you can see a manifestation of that because the registry, some of these look like they're up, some of them look like they're down, some of them are up partially, quote-unquote partially. That means their WSDL is available, but the endpoint isn't available. Why? Because the registry doesn't have access to actually go out and perform an operation on that web service. Some of them are totally public if you have an authenticated user, and some of the people who may have registered may have provided credentials to the registry to allow them to ping and help them check because they get a benefit from that. I publish a web service. I don't have a way to monitor web services. I'll give the registry the ability to invoke my web service, and then I get free monitoring. So the important point I'm trying to make is this isn't just a registry for publicly accessible web services. This is a registry for all web services, and the web services themselves don't have to be publicly available to be here.
Another part of the example I want to show, and if you look at the yellow where it says academic history, and if you notice Navigator, the one right there says Navigator Suite, is a different web service from a different vendor, actually, and it shows academic history as well as annotated. So, for example, that's done by Decision Academic, and the other services are done by, for example, the Trident one above. So the same service or variations of that same service, you can say, well, what's the difference? And we can actually drill down and see the differences. That obviously, they might have a service that, since someone annotated as academic history, must be doing something similar. Now, you can then program then for those dissimilar situations and accommodate for how the service could still be bridged then. In other words, we could do transformations between one service and another. So a whole range of new applications can be built by the fact that maybe different developers develop it differently, but they're really very similar actions. They might have course grade, and so forth. Okay.
Next time we're here, we'd actually like to demo that if we could do another presentation sometime in the future, because we're working on those now at Emory.
We will do that. So the last slide. That's it. So in a graphical form, really when we talk about the service itself, this is a simplistic diagram that shows the student information system all the way to the right, with three level services to the left of that, which are, one is doing authentication, the second is doing the academic history provider, and the third is doing the academic counter. And this is how we've implemented this service, right? It's pulling that data with some type of abstract service to the student information system, and then there's a front-end service called the academic history service, which is the actual wrapper of the entire service that calls those three providers. And that data is then passed back and forth to the application in the sky or the cloud that's calling that based upon the student's request. So that's the schematic that really describes the actual web service itself. Okay, that's it.
All right. Do you have one more slide here that I'd like to wrap up with? All right. Just to bring this home to an organization, particularly an academic institution that might be practicing SOA, here's kind of how we're doing it now at Emory using web service registries as part of SOA governance. We're developing web services and ESB services using ESB and EAI infrastructure. We expose those as web services, mostly WSDL described SOAP services, but also some REST services. We register those web services in Emory's private web service registry. At Emory, we actually happen to use a local private version of EdUnify, and we document and describe all of our services there. Then whenever we think that there's value, which is as often as possible, we're starting to register them in EdUnify. One trigger event of registering them in EdUnify is we have to tell a partner about them and collaborate with them rather than give trading partners access to our private Emory web service. We're like, hey, that's the reason right there to go put it in EdUnify. Case in point, Emory recently implemented Emory Mobile, which is a Blackboard mobile app for a camp access to campus resources, and we had to expose a bunch of Emory's data from PeopleSoft and the directory and athletics and other systems to Blackboard. So we defined those web services, implemented them, then we had to deliver them off to the Blackboard folks so they could invoke them and deliver them to the iPhone app and the BlackBerry app provided by Blackboard. And that's how the Blackboard folks know about those apps. It's registered in EdUnify. They can see those web services. They can tell if they're up or down. You know, we don't have to monitor them for them. They don't have to monitor them separately. So it's just a great facilitator when you're collaborating with a vendor or a trading partner. So, and actually, it's not just EdUnify. As I mentioned, we're doing ACTSI stuff for clinical and translational science. So we also use the BioCatalog, not the Calitug. The BioCatalog is what we register those services in when they're relevant to life sciences and the genomics and proteomics stuff we're doing. So I do think we have time for some questions, right? So shall we open it up? Thank you very much for coming. Any questions, thoughts, ideas? That's a good idea. The short answer is no. I don't think there's one that actually looks for distinct similarities on the WSDL as a whole. I know there are tools in the registry to look for duplicate operations and similar operations across services, but not I think at the whole WSDL level, saying is this the whole service? But that's feasible.
In terms of your academic same thing.
Right. Well, there is a common use case there. Let me describe how that would typically happen so far, but I do kind of like your idea of maybe looking at the whole definition. As well. The way that would normally work is there's abilities to search by inputs and outputs. And if you search for inputs and outputs, both from a structure or an operation level, that's how, like, both in the BioCatalog and I assume in EdUnify, that workflow might work. You're saying what services have similar inputs and outputs or operation actions, and then that will give you a list, and then you start looking at them more closely. I think what you said, though, may actually be very valuable once standards are, you know, any standard that starts to be widely adopted, like let's say that academic history one, or let's say PESC has a data transport service, a bunch of people could register those and name them totally differently, even though it's pretty much identical WSDL except for the binding and the endpoints. Now, if they use the process I just described of looking for inputs and outputs, they'd probably find the similar ones. But nothing would really tie them together and say, we think these 18 deployments are really the same specification. You know what I mean? So I think you're right. It would be kind of cool to have that overarching kind of analysis of we think these are the same service with a different binding. Because people are going to name these things. I very quickly gave up, even internally within my organization, to trying to get people to name things in a consistent manner. And you'll notice at Unify and both BioCatalog just allow for people to give it many, many names. You know, and you can decide which ones you ultimately want to promote to be the pretty public name. But I think we can count on the fact that people are going to register the same service and it's going to look totally different, you know, unless you search for it. So what do you think? You think this is something that's valuable?
Can I ask a second
question? Go.
Is there a way of registering that you're using a service?
Yes. Yeah, there's fields in there that say how is this service being used. And we actually have some requirements that we're working on with the BioCatalog folks trying to kind of decide who's going to implement it to maybe make that a little more distinct, almost like story use cases. Because right now, while people can add multiple, you know, descriptions, like my organization is using it this way, my organization is using it this way, it might be nice to break that out a little more and try to get a little more detail about what services, what systems they're using it with. Because in the freeform fields that are there now to describe this, they're basically stories, use cases of how it's being used. It'd probably be kind of hard to parse a lot of that detail out. But if we could get, hey, I'm using this service in conjunction with this student information system, when that's not obvious, you can start to make interesting linkages. Yeah, well, right now, certainly, anyone who uses a web service that's published can just add a story, here's how I'm using it, and you're right, that would be a great way for them to be saying, hey, I'm using this, please, you know, take that into account when you when you change it.
That's what we're hoping.
Absolutely, absolutely, that's what we're hoping. I'm sorry I'm a little distracted by your shirt because I just bought this book, Advice for Expectant Fathers, that has a shirt like that with this little chew toy on it, and so it looks you're wearing the exact same shirt as is on the cover of that book. So yes, exactly. That's exactly what we're hoping for, and many of the vendors who are already involved are doing just that. I mean, SunGuard Higher Education is a good example. They stepped up and started registering services there, and they're taking a leadership role. Dave, do you want to talk to some of the other vendors who are involved?
I think, you know, DataTel, Oracle, Genzibar, all the main student system vendors that are U.S.-based are already beginning to experiment. They haven't actually, not all of them. SunGuard is the only one that's put the actual registry entries in on the pre-beta, you know, launch. But again, we're hoping that over the next several months that we'll start seeing more services put in. And obviously, your pressure and your requests and will obviously make a big difference.
I think that's a great point. I think a lot of the vendors who aren't as proactive as several that Dave mentioned are only going to begin documenting and sharing those APIs in a public fashion when the users expect it and say, hey, we really want to see it.
When they have to think of a reason not to. When they have to come up with a reason not to.
And quite frankly, I think academic institutions are the same way. I think it would be good for us to all to find reasons and use cases to put stuff out there in the registry. This workflow here that I described with Emory is our day-to-day practice now, and we have our own private registry. But thinking about creative ways to facilitate participation and collaboration would be really welcome, and I think that's important. One idea I've had is we all have public directories, right, at our universities, or to some extent there's some public version redaction of that. Why don't, you know, Emory has a web service for that. It's now in the EdUnify registry. Seems like a ton of universities and colleges could publish a web service that allows access to their directory information and get that out there. You know,
you think about the apps you could build off of that. Once they were all in that registry, just think about the possibilities of the collaborative types of apps that you could build using some of that information.
And it's also a perfect use case for the interoperability tools we talked about, because no two, there's really no good standards there, or in the case that there are, no two institutions would probably implement them, but the data is very similar. So we could demonstrate annotations of querying a giant giant meta directory of many institutions using the annotations and interoperability tools. So I think it would be great to come up with some use cases that are pretty simple like that. All too often, it's like we're too busy, we have all this other stuff to do, but I mean, I think there are things we're doing anyway that we could probably just push out there and demonstrate some of these great applications with. Do I see another hand back there somewhere? Questions? Suggestions? What could we do next to get the word out about this and get people to participate and talk about it? Can you help with... That's a good question. We're, Dave, you may need to answer that because Dave's all over the world. From my perspective.
Watch this.
Okay, do it.
How many people are outside the United States?
There you go.
Right. We have obviously, sister organizations that we're trying to develop relationships with, like, for example, the Rome Student Group, RS3G. We have JISC, for example, in the room. You know, so I think that the news is getting out. But again, this is through word of mouth right now, or just some hard evangelizing we're doing.
I think clearly our relationship and collaboration with the BioCatalog group as well. I mean, they're very supportive of what we're doing, and we're really looking at it as an opportunity to really build off of each other.
So. Right. They've started the BioCatalog folks at Manchester and EBI have started. Advocating or showing this as a use case of the value of their project as well. So hopefully we'll be able to present more in Europe with some introductions from them. Really appreciate all your attention today. Any other ideas? I'm looking for that one killer idea that is just going to cause everyone to say, I got to register a service in EdUnify today. Anyone got that idea?
What's the writable REST API there?
What was that? Give away iPad. Did I hear SunGuard's going to offer to give away iPads?
Actually, once the writable REST APIs of it, does this work?
Yeah.
Think about the workflow that Steve mentioned earlier at Emory. We kind of do this manually. You know, we use, you know, access to or whatever to generate WSDL and generate stubs and all that stuff, and that all happens for us. The next step is, as part of that process, as part of that workflow, once the writable REST API is available, we can build tools to just register it right then. You know, once the definition exists, it can be registered. There's no reason for it not to. So it just kind of builds out that inventory. You know, we all talk about application inventories and things like that, but very few of us actually have them. And this is a way to actually get that from day one, you know, as these things are actually specified. So.
Great. Thank you all very much.